From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today's the biggest primary day so far in the 1996 presidential campaign. We'll look at what's going on politically in the states that are up for grabs. Also, one family's battle to get prayer out of public school in Mississippi. It's now in federal court. And lies, damn lies in the public relations industry. We'll take a look at PR and presidential politics.
George Will has been attacking Pat Buchanan viciously. I find it really enjoyable to watch George Will attacking Pat Buchanan. But it might be good to mention to people who don't know this, which is probably 99% of the audience, that George Will's wife, Mary Massing Will, is Bob Dole's public relations flack. She's his press secretary, one of the people who survived the recent round of firings in the Bob Dole campaign.
That and more today on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. 8 primaries, 5 caucuses. It's called Junior Tuesday. We'll take a tour of the states with our national affairs correspondent, Larry Bensky. Then we'll be joined by former Congressman Tom Andrews, now head of People for the American Way, which tracks the right. Among the things we'll look at is Bob Dole's 100% rating by the Christian Coalition. Then we'll go down to Mississippi to talk to the mother of 6 children who doesn't want them to have to pray in school, and she's in court today to fight for her beliefs. And we're going to be looking at the power of public relations, from the large firms to presidential politics to TV commentators and who they've worked for. But before we delve into the big lie, let's take a look at the primary and caucus states today. Today, voting is going to take place in Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Idaho, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Utah, Washington, and American Samoa. For commentary on some of the states and what to look for in these states, let's go out to California to Pacifica Station KPFA, where our national affairs correspondent Larry Bensky is standing by. Larry, are you there?
Yes, I am, Amy. Hello.
Good to hear you. Well, last week we spoke to you in Arizona after the primary, and it seemed at that point like a 3-way battle all the way to the convention in San Diego. Now the media is saying Bob Dole has it all locked up. What's changed?
Well, what's changed, Amy, is we had a primary between then and now in South Carolina. South Carolina is not today, as I believe you mentioned in that list. It was actually last Saturday. And the South Carolina primary was a very big victory for Bob Dole in a state where Pat Buchanan might have been expected to do well. And it was an especially big victory for Bob Dole because it's a state where a lot of Christian coalition people and other far-right forces are present. It's the battleground and home ground of the late Lee Atwater, who helped turn the South from relatively solidly Democratic to relatively solidly Republican now through tactics that were largely racist. And in South Carolina, where there are so many voters associated with the Christian coalition, Bob Dole managed to take more votes from such people than Pat Buchanan did. And this has caused a lot of people, including today's Wall Street Journal, for example, to start writing the political obituary of Pat Buchanan. So this is to Dole's advantage, of course, and to the people around him to try to portray the race as essentially over now and that they're on a soft glide path towards getting the nomination.
Do you think it matters much, Gingrich saying he's supporting Dole?
Well, that's why today's Georgia primary is the most important one of all, Amy, the 8 or 10 that you mentioned. Georgia is a state that has gone from, again, in the South, being relatively reliably Democratic on the congressional and senatorial level to being overwhelmingly Republican. And Gingrich's endorsement of Dole, I don't know if you noticed, was very half-hearted. He came out of the voting booth saying, "I'm not going to tell anybody whom I'm voting for." And then afterward, Bob Dole announced that Gingrich had voted for Dole. Thereupon, Gingrich said, "Oh, yeah, I really did vote for Dole." I mean, it's not exactly a ringing statement of endorsement. Why Georgia is important today is, first of all, it has the most delegates at stake, 32, but it also, rather, it has 42 delegates at stake, but also because it is Gingrich's home turf. He is, fancies himself in his own mind to be a political boss, And if he has taken a pro-Dole stance, it's going to be very interesting to see if the far-right forces in Georgia follow him. I have a hunch, I could be wrong here, and I don't like to predict, as you know, I have a hunch that Pat Buchanan may do much better in Georgia than Bob Dole and Newt Gingrich want him to.
What about Colorado?
Well, Colorado is another state that Bob Dole really needs to do well in. It is literally his neighboring state to Kansas. The Christian coalition forces are quite well organized there as well. There's a very, very thriving far right in the region around Colorado Springs. And the Republican establishment in Colorado has not unanimously endorsed Bob Dole as they have in virtually every other state. So this is another possibility where Pat Buchanan may be bringing up some strength from the reserves. Now, we haven't talked yet about Steve Forbes, and of course, the big test for Forbes is going to be Thursday, and we'll be talking about that later this week in New York. Forbes's big tactic is usually spending tons and tons of money on radio and television ads, and he hasn't done that so much in Georgia and in Colorado and in the other states today as he did in Arizona, the one state he's won so far. It'll be interesting to see if Forbes can get a decent showing in a place like Colorado, which somewhat resembles Arizona, which he won, in the demographics of who votes in the Republican Party. There are a lot of retirees who've gone there. There are a lot of younger, high-tech people who are interested in his tax message. Forbes could do relatively well in Colorado. If he doesn't, well, what difference does it make? He's got enough money to keep running everywhere, and he may well do so.
In fact, he does say that he is going to go right through to the convention.
Well, they all say that, except for Lamar Alexander, who's finally come out and said if he loses Florida next week, he's out of there. And I think we can safely say he's not going to win Florida, so he's probably out of there.
Why do you think Florida is so important to him? Why is he using that as the proving ground?
He's raised a great deal of money in the state of Florida, and he has portrayed himself as a Southern moderate former governor. The demographics of whose support seem to mirror to some extent the demographics in Florida. However, the joker in the pack in Florida, of course, is that many of the Republican voters are Cuban Americans who are extremely conservative on all issues. I think we're going to have one of those escalations of anti-Castro rhetoric that we get around election time next week in Florida, some of it coming from the unlikely mouth of Lamar Alexander.
You know, one of the states that is going to the polls today is Maine, and we're going to talk in a few minutes with the former Maine Congressman, Tom Andrews, who's now head of People for the American Way. But before we do that, Larry, Massachusetts, that's a key state.
Massachusetts is a key state, not because it's a Republican state, although in recent years the personal popularity of Governor William Weld has changed the demographics of the electorate there somewhat, more into the Republican column when they vote, but not in how they register. And Amy, Massachusetts and Georgia and Colorado and a number of these other states would be much more interesting today were this the real primary. I know that a lot of people who follow elections even a little bit realize that there's a very hotly contested Senate seat coming up in Massachusetts where Senator John Kerry is going to be challenged by that Governor William Weld, that there's an open Republican seat in Colorado, which we just talked about as having a primary, and an open Democratic seat in Georgia. However, today the primaries for those seats are not being held. The taxpayers in these states are going to have to go into their pockets for two primaries. In fact, the Georgia statewide primary to decide who's going to run for Sam Nunn's seat is in July. The Colorado primary is in August, and the Massachusetts primary is not until September. So, in fact, this is a sheer presidential primary. And one other note on that that I think people should notice: a lot of people are militating, especially in the progressive side of the political spectrum, about changing the electoral politics system itself into something more along the lines of proportional representation. And I know we're going to be talking about that here on Democracy Now! As the weeks and months go on. It's interesting to note that the establishment usually says, oh, that would never work. We really have a two-party system here. But proportional representation is being used, for example, in three states today to select Republican delegates in Colorado, in Maine, and in Washington state. And a modified form of proportional representation where some delegates are elected at large and some elected by district is in effect in today's primaries alone in Georgia and in Maryland. So if it works in primaries for the political parties, why not try it and give more representation to minority parties, so-called, in general elections? That's an argument that I think we're going to hear more and more from people as this primary season goes on, and as more and more people evidence their disgust with the way the electoral system in general is run, that shuts out anything but the two big parties.
Larry, thank you very much for joining us. And of course, we're going to continue to talk about this issue of proportional representation, not to mention how these primaries and caucuses turn out. Sometimes it can be confusing because you have a Republican caucus or primary that gets a lot of attention because they are hotly contested right now. And then you have a Democratic primary in a state a couple days later, and we don't even realize it's quite happening. And that's what's going on in the states.
Not only that, Amy, but in a state like Georgia today, for example, there's no party registration at all, so anybody can vote. And that's another reason why Pat Buchanan may do well there with independent Perot-type voters and even Democrats who want to cross over and either cause the Republicans some mischief by trying to nominate Buchanan, or because, as members of unions frequently are in this election season, they do support Buchanan. So again, Georgia is the one to watch, and we'll be back tomorrow telling our listeners how it all turns out.
Larry, thank you very much for joining us. Larry Bensky, our national affairs correspondent, speaking to us from Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley. And you're listening to Democracy Now! Well, we're joined right now by someone from another state that is having a primary today. In 1990, the good people of Maine's 1st District, which includes Kennebunkport, George Bush's vacation home, sent Tom Andrews to the House of Representatives to fulfill his campaign pledges, spending tax dollars wisely, keeping Maine's environment safe and clean, working for equal opportunity. And interestingly, the 1st District includes many voters whose livelihood depends on defense contracts, the Bath Iron Works, the Brunswick Naval Air Station, the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard were all part of Andrews' district. And he went to Washington saying he would be cutting defense spending. Now, that is pretty brave. Well, ultimately, he went for a Senate seat. He lost to Republican Olympia Snow, who is the senator from Maine now. And he is currently the head of People for the American Way, and we want to welcome you to Democracy Now!, Tom Andrews.
Amy, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Now, People for the American Way tracks the right. Maybe you can give us just a quick description of People for the American Way, and then we'll talk briefly about your home state, Maine.
Well, Amy, People for the American Way is a citizen organization, membership-based. We have 300,000 members from one end of the country to the other. We believe in basic principles and values that are under attack by the extreme right. E Pluribus Unum, for example, out of many, one, that America's diversity is America's strength. And not only should we accept and respect our diversity, but celebrate our diversity and come together as one. We believe in the basic idea that no one should be guaranteed success in America, but that everyone should be guaranteed the opportunity to succeed. And that includes children that need programs that are under attack by the right, such as the Head Start program or school breakfast program or working families' ability to send their kids to college, depending upon college loans and grants. We believe in freedom, the idea that people should be free to speak, that what you take out of a public library should not be based upon an ideological censor, but based upon your own judgment. The idea that we are not a Christian nation. We're not a Jewish nation. We're not a Muslim nation or a Buddhist nation. We are a free nation. And everyone should be free to practice their religion on the basis of their own conscience and spirituality and not upon the dictates or direction of a government or a school system. So those are some of the basic ideals and values that we're fighting very hard to protect and promote.
Speaking of religion, in just a little while, we're going to be going down to Mississippi to speak with Lisa Herdahl, who is in court today to fight for her belief that her 6 children should not be praying in school. This is a case People for the American Way is quite involved with. On the issue of what you're doing about this, about your beliefs, People for the American Way, what does it mean to say you're tracking the right? And what is your assessment right now of the Republican primaries and who's running?
We launched a program, Amy, back a few months ago in Iowa called Expose the Right. And the basic idea was that Americans really don't understand to the extent that they should what this right-wing agenda is and what it will mean for America if they are successful. Much of the coverage that you hear and see about these primaries and caucuses are like you're following a sports contest or a horse race. Who's up, who's down, who jabbed, who ducked. And you're not hearing what this all means, what it all adds up to. There really is very little choice for moderate pro-choice. In fact, there's no choice for a moderate pro-choice Republican in these caucuses and primaries, for example. I mean, if you believe in, well, if you look back for a few months here and you saw the news conference that these right-wing leaders had 4 days before General Colin Powell dropped out of the race, they said there's no place in the Republican primary presidential process for someone who has the moderate views of a General Powell on things like affirmative action or a woman's right to choose. Just you need not apply if you have those views. And what's happened is that you have this entire field racing to the right, trying to outdo one another to gain the favor of very extreme right-wing groups. What we've been doing, in fact, in Iowa, New Hampshire, at every single political event of every major presidential candidate, we were there asking questions and asking them to take positions on this extreme right-wing agenda and what it means for Americans.
I remember in New Hampshire, one of your Expose the Right campaigners asked Lamar Alexander if he would consider Pat Robertson as a running mate, and he said yes.
He said that I would consider someone who I respected, who I liked, and whose views are like my own, and then he said yes, therefore I would consider Pat Robertson.
What about Pat Buchanan? I mean, we know what his views are, and he very much has been marginalized by the Republican establishment. They want to make him look like an extremist, and an extremist he may be, but how much more extreme is he than, for example, Bob Dole?
Very little. The fact of the matter is that Pat Buchanan exposes what's happening in these primaries and caucuses for the reality that it is. These are candidates with extreme views. I mean, if you ask most Americans about something like an issue like choice, for example, most Americans believe in respecting a woman's right to choose. Well, you have no place to go in this primary. In fact, we asked people if they would support the Republican platform or at least stand up and try to change the Republican platform that says that even a victim of rape should not have the choice of whether to carry pregnancy to term, and everybody kind of headed for the hills with respect to that. Let's take Lamar Alexander, who has been promoted as someone who is the moderate alternative to a Bob Dole. Give me a break. I mean, here you have a man who wants to abolish even the basic safety net, social safety net, that even Ronald Reagan supported. Here's someone who told us on the campaign trail that he would repeal the Brady Bill. This is a law that has the support of over 90% of the American people, and as president of the United States, the so-called moderate would repeal it. So the fact of the matter is that there is very little place to go for moderates and pro-choice people and people that have a more moderate point of view in this race.
Bob Dole at the Christian Coalition rallies he's been to, can you describe what they've been like?
Well, they are called God and Country rallies, and they're used as techniques for the right wing, the Christian Coalition, organizing tools to bring out their faithful, strut their stuff, flex their muscles, and show what they can do. And let me tell you, Amy, they are very sophisticated. They're very hardworking. I have a lot of respect for them. They really do bring people to the polls and squeeze every ounce of support they have into this process. The key to their success is the idea that most of the rest of us are going to be asleep at the switch. We're not going to be participating in these things. And so they're able to be very successful. Bob Dole shows up to these rallies, holds up the Christian Coalition scorecard, proclaims that he scores perfectly right down the line and that he will walk right alongside of them in perfect harmony as president of the United States.
Well, some say, well, you have to pander during the primaries to the right flank of your party. What do you think? Do you think Bob Dole will shift from that, or that really does determine his agenda, and that has been his voting record in Congress?
Well, he's claiming that this is who he is. He's pointing to his record. He says that he truly is someone who believes in and will support and has supported the agenda of religious political extremists. There's every reason to believe that when he is in office, he will follow suit. So I think anyone who's hoping that this is just a chameleon politics as usual technique, he's going to say one thing to the right and then do something else when he's elected to office, I think that's wishful thinking.
People can just look at his record, I guess. He's certainly got a long record.
That's exactly right.
We're talking to Tom Andrews, who is former congressman from Maine and now is heading up People for the American Way. We're going to go to a break and then come back, but I do have to ask, People for the American Way has been around as long as Christian Coalition. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you why it is you think Christian Coalition has become so powerful if, as you believe, the majority of people in this country support your kind of views. That's all coming up, as well as Lisa Herdall, who will be talking to us about her battle in Mississippi. And then we'll be going to John Stauber, who is author of a book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. We're going to find out about PR and presidential politics, all coming up on Democracy Now! You are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Is Pacifica's national, daily, grassroots election show. And we urge listeners who are enjoying the show to tell their friends about it in other states where it's not being heard to call their community or public radio stations to tell them to run Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We're joined in the studio by Tom Andrews, who is a former congressman from Maine and is now heading up People for the American Way, which is tracking the right in this campaign, not only in this campaign, but that is its mission, founded by Norman Lear. And we're joined on the telephone right now by Lisa Herdall, who is a mother in Mississippi, a mother of six children, who believes that they shouldn't be forced to pray in school. But before we go to Lisa, I did want to follow up on that question, Congressman Andrews, and that is the question of why the Christian Coalition has gotten as strong as it has, been around as long as People for the American Way. Why hasn't People for the American Way fared so well if you're about building a movement?
First of all, Amy, as I said before, you have to give them a lot of credit for the hard work and organizing that they've done. I mean, basically, they have stolen a page from those of us who are progressive. They looked at the great success that we've had in the past, organizing people, bringing them to the polls, getting them active, and that's exactly what they're doing. The basic theory is that they may only have a minority view, that is, only a minority of Americans believe in what they believe in, but if 100% of their minority goes to the polls and most of the rest of us are asleep and not showing up, they're going to win, and that's exactly what they've done. The challenge for us is pretty simple. We have to feel the same kind of passion and commitment for our values and our point of view as they do for theirs, and then we have to translate that into organizing. That's what People for the American Way is now doing. That's what Expose the Right is all about. That's what our other activities around the country are all about. We need to build a progressive grassroots movement to take these people on.
Well, there is clearly one woman who feels very strongly about her views, and she is taking those views to court. Lisa Herdall is joining us from a hotel room in Mississippi right now, where she's just about to leave for court. She is taking her school district to court for bringing prayer into the schools. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Lisa Herdall.
Hi.
Hi. Can you tell us, in a nutshell, what your case is about, what it is that your children were doing in school, and what you don't want them to be doing?
The focus of our case is intercom prayer, prayer broadcast over the intercom, which has had a temporary injunction, and the Bible classes that are taught in kindergarten through sixth grade and 9th through 12th grade, and then there is some teacher involvement with prayer in classrooms.
How much involvement? Your kids in school, what do the teachers tell them?
Basically, they tell them, you know, the children that want to pray, go ahead and stay here in the classroom, and this is before lunch. The kids that want to pray, go ahead and stay in the classroom. Those that aren't going to pray, stand out in the hall with me. So it's giving the... It's making the kids still get harassed because they're different. you've got the teacher announcing that, you know, now is prayer time. So the school needs to just get completely out of it and let it be student-initiated.
Yesterday, your 16-year-old son, Kevin, testified about a history teacher who, what, preached about being saved and showed a crucifixion video at Easter time?
Yes.
And what did he, did Kevin say anything to him at the time?
I don't really think he did, and I asked him why he didn't, and I think Kevin basically stated it before. The school district wouldn't listen to me, the principal, the vice principal, and so he felt that if he went to them and told them, they wouldn't listen to him either, so he would come to me and tell me.
Lisa Hurdall, you're a Christian. There are Christian prayers that are being said in school. What's your problem with this?
There are all forms of religions and beliefs and non-beliefs, and one group cannot take over a school, take over the intercom, and broadcast their prayer. I don't honestly believe one prayer can cover everybody, and even if I was what the majority is in town, I would still disagree with it because I don't think my prayer should be forced over an intercom or two other children in a captive audience.
Going against the, is it the majority, would you say, in your area that feels that you're wrong?
Yes.
Going against them, how has that affected your kids?
It's made them stronger. They've learned to deal with people of different opposing views. They've learned what the word of intolerance means. They can see now what it's like to be a minority. They were learning to stand up for what they believe is honestly right, and I think these are all things that they need.
Congressman Tom Andrews, head of People for the American Way, this is certainly not an isolated school district. During the South Carolina presidential debate, the Republican primary debate, it sounded like Lisa Hurdall did not have many candidates on her side.
That's correct, Amy. Lisa Hurdall is a true American hero. The reason you don't hear about these kind of cases all that often is because it takes a great deal of courage and resolve to stand up and fight for basic religious liberty. I mean, we're talking about something that started over 200 years ago when a group of people came over to the United States, so across the Atlantic Ocean, seeking religious freedom, seeking the basic right to practice religion as they see fit, based on their conscience and their spirituality, and not based upon what a government dictated to them. That is exactly what is at stake here. And Lisa Hurdall and her family are standing up for the American way in the best sense of the word, and she truly is an American hero.
Lisa Hurdall, the school superintendent, Jerry Horton, says he's going to fight this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Are you willing to go that far?
Yes.
So you're going to take it there?
If they want to take it that far, that's where we're going to go.
Well, we want to thank you very much for joining us, Lisa Hurdall, in Mississippi. You're going to court in a few minutes?
Yes.
Who's going to testify today?
I'll tell you the truth, I'm not really sure.
Any more of your children?
No, I think the children are done.
Are your children going with you?
My oldest is.
Mm-hmm. And have you maintained your job down there? You were working, what, in a convenience store?
Yes. No, I had to quit just before Christmas.
Why'd you have to quit?
Just problems at work.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like your kids are having some problems at school as well.
They are still getting harassment. A couple of them are having a difficult time as far as keeping up with the other kids, and it's not that they can't. It's just everyday just the idea of the harassment and why are you doing this, and it gets to them after a while. You know, I have to talk to them every day and say, come on, you know, school is your job. You need to go to school. So it is difficult on them.
Lisa Hurdall, thank you very much for joining us. Tom Andrews, how is People for the American Way taking on the issue of school prayer in a national way?
Two ways, Amy. First of all, we're backing up in a legal way Lisa Hurdall and others like her. We provide her and others with the legal backup to go into court and to fight for her basic rights. Secondly, we're not only arguing this in the court of law, but also we're trying to take this to the court of public opinion. It's a very difficult thing to deal with an issue that some would describe as being for or against God, for or against prayer. And what we have to do, and we have to work very hard at this, is talk to Americans about the basic idea of religious freedom, about religious liberty, and the fact that people should be able to decide what kind of prayers they're going to pray, what kind of readings they're going to have in terms of religious readings based on their conscience. No student should be forced to choose between violating their faith and being harassed. And that is exactly what's going on with Lisa Herdahl's family. It's going on probably with many families who face this situation. And it's wrong. And I think that if we are successful in getting this message out and talking about the basic precious idea of religious freedom, we'll be successful. But frankly, Amy, we have a long way to go.
Well, Tom Andrews, I want to thank you for being with us. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk about Maine. We'll do it another time in your battle against the defense industry. Tom Andrews, a former congressman from Maine, is head of People for the American Way. And if you'd like to get in touch with them, you can call them at their Washington office, 202-467-4999. That's 202-467-4999. Or if you're as sophisticated as using email, you can reach them at their email address, pfaw@pfaw.org. That's pfaw@pfaw.org. Tom Andrews, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Again, Democracy Now! Is Pacifica's daily grassroots election show, bringing the voice of the grassroots into the national political discourse. And right now, we're going to turn to another issue. Toxic sludge? Yes, toxic sludge is good for you. That's the name of a new book, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Public Relations Industry. The book is about how the PR industry is wielding vast powers in America today. It's by John Stauber, founder of a group called PR Watch. It documents how countless examples of how the PR industry is destroying the democratic process in America through stealth campaigns pretend to look like citizen action. I got a chance to meet and interview John Stauber at the Media and Democracy Congress in San Francisco.
My belief that democracy is in steep decline and, in fact, has been tremendously corrupted and degraded, and in some terrible ways even made meaningless by the power of corporations. I think when Pat Buchanan is comfortable attacking the power of multinational corporations to dominate our politics, our lives, and our livelihood, we can be sure that this is the feeling of the public at large. And how can it not be? When we look at state capitals or we look at Washington, D.C., it's clear that corporations have dominated the political landscape through their lobbyists, through their campaign contributions, and the entire political spectrum now ranges primarily from the far right to the near right. The idea of really challenging corporate power and providing, as government should, for the needs of the common people is just, as they say, not even open to debate and discussion in the halls of Congress. I mean, we are in very dire times. The public relations industry is the arm of corporate propaganda that has really helped to deliver us into this dreadful situation. And one of the more interesting public relations developments over the last 5 or 10 years has been the complete takeover of grassroots politics by corporations and their PR consultants. You know, the idea that big business runs Washington, D.C. isn't new, and it's really pretty much a consensus observation now. But what I found in researching Toxic Sludge is Good for You and in editing PR Watch is that the same big business interests that whose lobbyists and have taken over D.C. Through direct marketing and what's called AstroTurf organizing are now dominating grassroots politics. I mean, we really saw that with the complete murder, if you will, of any debate around health care reform. The insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, pumped tens of millions of dollars into organizing the appearance of grassroots support for maintaining the status quo. We uncovered an incident in the book utilizing the Rush Limbaugh campaign. This is now how politics works in America. The insurance industry put ads on the Limbaugh show. Now, of course, Rush Limbaugh ranted and raved against any sort of health care reform. He has something like a 20 million person radio audience, the most powerful political commentator in the United States. So imagine this. Rush Limbaugh would be ranting and raving about how health care reform is next to Stalinism. going on and on, the ditto heads all eating it up, all 20 million of them, and suddenly they cut to a commercial, and then during the commercial, the health insurance industry would fund an ad saying, of course, if you're concerned about threat to health care, meaning health care reform, call this 800 number. People listening to Limbaugh, and this was in the midst of the big debate in Washington over health care, would call the 800 number. Their name, address, phone number, other essential information would be gathered, and then the telemarketer would say to them, you know, I can patch you through for free to your congressperson's office right now. Would you like that? And they would. A person listening to Rush Limbaugh, anti-health care reform, calling an 800 number, is suddenly talking with a receptionist in a senator or congressperson's office, ranting and railing, repeating what they just heard Rush say, what they just heard this commercial say. And using that technique, that stealth hidden technique, the insurance industry was able to dump tens of thousands of angry calls in a strategic, planned, programmed way into the offices of candidates or of representatives in Washington, D.C. And on their end, they don't know that this is going on. The only reason I know it is because I paid to attend a PR event at which the consultants who organized this, Blair Childs, on behalf of the insurance industry, were bragging about its effectiveness. And we include that in our book. I mean, this is this great grassroots outpouring to try to kill health care reform or try to promote so-called smokers' rights on behalf of the tobacco company. It's phony. And what's happened is, using direct marketing, telemarketing, databases, rooms of hundreds of trained professional callers, and even paid grassroots organizers, grassroots politics has been taken over by the same big businesses who dominate political lobbying in the nation's capital.
And it's called AstroTurf PR because it looks like grassroots?
AstroTurf is the derisive word, but among the people who do it, they even use AstroTurf to deride the really poor forms of it, the stuff that's very, very blatant. And in fact, this type of phony grassroots organizing, which is, I think, just destroyed the democratic process in the last 5 or 10 years in ways we can't even imagine, because it's blotting out real citizen concern. I mean, just imagine how many Americans actually called their congressperson because of a deeply held, personally formed feeling on health care reform. And I would venture that a lot did, but I know that a heck of a lot more called because it was drummed up through the paid efforts of the industries that most feared health care reform and that successfully married those AstroTurf techniques to insidious lobbying and TV advocacy, like the Harry and Louise campaign that also had an 800 number attached to it, was paid for by the insurance industry, scared people into thinking health care reform was bad for them, had them call an 800 number and bring them into this ginned up campaign. This is drowning out legitimate democracy. I believe that now more people, far more people actually contact politicians or buttonhole them to talk with them or pick up the phone and call their offices because of paid corporate campaigns geared to generate the appearance of grassroots support than actually do it as true citizens of democracy acting on their own beliefs and volitions. Last summer, the summer of 1995, this industry, this AstroTurf industry, which is part of the PR industry and where politics and PR really come together, had a very embarrassing occurrence. One of the big AstroTurf firms is called Beckel Cowan. These two guys, Beckel and Cowan, got their start in politics working for liberal Democrats like Walter Mondale. They were major in Mondale's presidential bid quite a few years back. Well, they've now formed an AstroTurf campaign, and they work for the pharmaceutical industry and the petroleum industry to generate support. This summer, they are working for the telecommunications industry on the telecommunications bill, and they made the mistake of going a little overboard, and they generated thousands and thousands of telegrams, so these pseudo-telegrams into Washington from people who never agreed to have their names used, in some cases were dead, and they were discovered. It was so outrageous. They at first tried to deny responsibility and then blamed it on a subcontractor, but it was a very big embarrassment. And for the first time ever, major corporate media focused a little bit of attention on this AstroTurf corporate organizing. I remember watching Nightline. Ted Koppel had a program, and Bob Beckel wasn't on it, but he was interviewed, and then somebody from Common Cause, and a fellow by the name of Jack Bonner, who's one of these AstroTurf organizers, were commenting. But then the issue sort of faded. And now you might think that Bob Beckel would be ostracized or punished, or their career would be washed up, or they'd be personally discredited or ethically discredited for this sort of activity. But I just picked up the paper the other day and read that, in fact, he is now an election commentator on the 96 presidential campaign working for CBS. You know, here's this person caught falsifying a lobby campaign, faking grassroots, outrageous, ends up a huge scandal. There's no criminal action. He gets a nice job being a commentator on the election for CBS. And it just shows how the revolving door spins between PR, lobbying, and the big media. And so often, these pundits, these commentators who are introduced to analyze political campaigns are public relations people themselves, and yet they're never identified.
You're listening to Democracy Now! From Pacifica Radio. More from John Stauber, author of Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry, after this. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. John Staubers is the founder of the Center for Media and Democracy and editor of PR Watch, which documents how the corporate public relations industry is dominating the media and manipulating the political process, including in the 1996 presidential election year.
Most people are familiar with George Will. George Will has been attacking Pat Buchanan viciously. I find it really enjoyable to watch George Will attacking Pat Buchanan. But it might be good to mention to people who don't know this, which is probably 99% of the audience, that George Will's wife, Mary Massing Will, is Bob Dole's public relations flack. She's his press secretary, one of the people who survived the recent round of firings in the Bob Dole campaign. I mean, I have no proof of this, but, you know, maybe the reason Bob Dole didn't fire George Will's wife was because it might not be real good at a time when George Will is making such mincemeat out of Pat Buchanan. I don't know. It's total speculation, but I think the campaign would certainly be much more interesting, and people would get a better insight into how incestuous the ties are between big media, big PR, and big politics, if we knew who some of these people are and how connected they are.
The name of your book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. In fact, that's a very current story.
It's a very current story, and we chose the title of our book before we realized that, in fact, there is a publicly funded public relations campaign utilizing a powerful political PR firm, Paul Tate, to try to sell the American people on the idea that sewage sludge contaminated with thousands of toxins from every imaginable pathogen to PCBs and dioxins and radioactivity is in fact now good for us. It's too toxic to dump in the ocean, to incinerate, or to landfill, but we're not calling it sludge anymore. It's now biosolids, a natural organic fertilizer, and with the EPA's blessing, it's going to be hauled out and put on cropland to grow our food. This is the decision that the EPA has come to, clearly a public relations decision on how to deal with the mountains and mountains and mountains of contaminated toxic sludge building up at every sewage plant in the country.
Now, are you saying that in their PR campaign, they use the term toxic sludge is good for you?
No, they don't. They don't say toxic sludge is good for you. Would that they would. I mean, we picked the title based on a Tom Tomorrow cartoon. We didn't realize it at the time, but that's what put this idea into our mind, Tom Tomorrow cartoon. And it was sort of like, don't we wish these PR campaigns were so blatant that they actually said toxic sludge is good for you. Instead, they say beneficial biosolids, a natural organic fertilizer, are wonderful for your garden. And they hope to goodness that you don't ask them what biosolids are, because biosolids is the term, the euphemism that they have developed carefully to replace the term sludge. We don't call it sludge anymore, the public relations flack for the sewage industry said. We now call it biosolids. It's a beneficial fertilizer. This person, Nancy Blatt, actually called us while our book was in the works to see if we wouldn't change the title, because she felt it might adversely impact on their public relations campaign to promote biosolids fertilizer. Now, we're talking politics, and what's interesting is that the public relations firm that's promoting biosolids and promoting a campaign to make this issue, quote, non-controversial, unquote, by the year 2000, so that nobody knows that our food is now being grown in sewage sludge, is the Powell Tate firm. Powell is Jody Powell, who is Jimmy Carter's press secretary. Tate is Sheila Tate, who was Nancy Reagan and George Bush's press secretary, and also happens to be the reelected chairperson of the board of directors of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. What a powerful right-wing public relations flack is doing as the chair of the board of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, I don't know, and I really don't want to speculate on too much, but I have noticed that, in my opinion, a lot of the programming of CPB has taken somewhat of a right-wing, dumbed-down direction over the last few years that I'm not too happy about.
Tell us about the lawsuit that is going to court this week.
Well, most people don't know the toxic sludge story. I mean, we didn't know it until we chose this title and sort of stumbled upon it or stepped in it or whatever. But in August of 1994, the excellent TV Nation program aired an 8-minute segment, airing nationally then on NBC, about how sewage sludge from New York City was being hauled all the way across country in train cars to this tiny little Mexican border town in West Texas called Sierra Blanca, where a company, Merco, that had a huge contract, has a huge contract with the city of New York, would dump this New York sewage sludge on the ground. It would dry out, blow around. I mean, this was the solution to pollution is dilution, is this terrible old term, but and the residents of Sierra Blanca couldn't stand the smell. There were complaints that people were developing strange illnesses and asthma diseases. And TV Nation did a nice little 8-minute segment on this, which resulted in a $33 million lawsuit brought by the sludge hauler, Merco, against Sony, which I believe owned rights to the TV Nation piece, against local anti-sludge activists in Sierra Blanca, and against Hugh Kaufman, an EPA official and whistleblower who lambasted hauling sewage sludge out to the desert to this poor little impoverished Mexican-American community. This is a slap suit, clearly. A slap suit is a suit brought by a major corporation to try to shut people up. In this case, Merco filed a suit. SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. It's an acronym that implies a slap, you know, shut up, don't talk about this stuff. We know people and know about sludge. And it's designed to intimidate. And the lawsuit is as we speak, in court in West Texas. Now, if Merco, the sludge hauler, wins this suit, it's going to have a very chilling impact on environmental reporting, on community activism, and on just the general reporting of all the issues surrounding toxic sludge.
You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We're talking to John Stauber. He is author of Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Public Relations Industry. And again, he puts out a quarterly newsletter called PR Watch. I don't want to end this interview without talking about Alestra. Now, I'm trying to figure out how Alestra is tied to the election, since this is a grassroots election show. But I think it shows the power of the PR industry and the connections between government and public relations and the subversion of the democratic process. Can you talk a little about what this is and how it all fits together?
Alestra is a chemical that mimics fat. Big difference between Alestra and fat is that our stomachs don't digest Alestra, and so it passes through undigested. It's probably not the sort of thing you want to eat. Studies indicate that it can cause stomach problems, diarrhea. Some suspect it may be a carcinogen. The Center for Science and the Public Interest, Michael Jacobson's organization in Washington, is outraged that the Food and Drug Administration recently approved the Procter & Gamble companies being able to take this fake fat and put it in their potato chips. They sell Pringles. Because people are going to get sick from this. People are going to develop, what's called a leaky rectum. They're going to develop diarrhea. There's going to be all sorts of gross problems in a significant number of people who eat this drug, Alestra, that was approved by FDA.
What do you mean, leaky rectum?
I think I'll just leave that to the imagination. We're talking stomach problems and diarrhea.
But why? Why would this happen? The fat actually goes straight through because it can't be digested?
Yeah, this stuff isn't digested. It passes through your system undigested, and in some people it causes severe digestive problems that result in diarrhea.
In fact, well, we were sent a PR packet from Procter & Gamble that gave us a bandana to cover our eyes with so we could do a taste test between a regular potato chip and the fat-free Alestra. I guess it goes under the brand name of Oleon potato chips. How does this fit in, this product of Procter & Gamble, a well-known multinational corporation, how does this fit into the whole PR story?
It fits in this way. Procter & Gamble is now the world's largest advertiser. $5 billion a year spent by one corporation advertising its products, such as Pringles potato chips, the delivery system for the Alestra. Think how many more Pringles will be sold when they can advertise it as completely fat-free because the Alestra drug is in Pringles potato chips instead of fat. Procter & Gamble also sells all sorts of cleaning agents, which are going to probably be used to clean up the various messes resulting from Alestra. They're also the major manufacturer of adult diapers. Now, currently, I don't wear adult diapers, and I haven't found the need to wear adult diapers, but if I ate a lot of Pringles, who knows, I might. I mean, this begins to sound a little conspiratorial, but it's really just, brilliant, synergistic marketing. But the most amazing bit of the marketing is for 95 years, Procter & Gamble has sold a product that we all know and love, the pink stuff, Pepto-Bismol. And I suspect that somewhere hidden in the bowels of Procter & Gamble, if you will, there is all sorts of analysis of how much more Pepto-Bismol might actually be sold based on how many more Alestra-filled potato chips are eaten. It sounds hilarious, but the outrageous part of it is this should, in my opinion, never have been approved by the FDA. And you say, well, okay, what's the public relations connection here? I think it's a great example of how if you buy $5 billion worth of advertising on corporate media, you can actually buy a lot of silence. And I haven't seen much coverage at all of this issue. The other interesting connection is there's public relations consultant in Washington, D.C. by the name of Carol Tucker Foreman. Many people might know Carol Tucker Foreman. For years, she was the executive director of the Consumer Federation of America. After that, Jimmy Carter appointed her as an undersecretary of agriculture. Then she formed a consulting PR firm called Foreman and Heidepreem. Her clients include Emily's List, which is a PAC that provides money to women candidates of both parties, very influential organization. Her clients include the Safe Food Coalition, something she started which promotes meat safety. Sounds a very fine and public interest organization. Her clients also include Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, and most recently, Procter & Gamble's Lestra. So here you have somebody who's identified with public interest causes, with consumer causes, with feminist political work, who has another hat that she wears when she's lobbying in Congress, and this is the hat for Procter & Gamble to promote approval and use of Elestra, the hat for Monsanto to promote bovine growth hormone, and it's a great example of how when products are pushed and they're approved by FDA, even though they're unsafe, there's always a combination of forces, including lobbying, public relations, and advertising that come together as integrated communications. And in this case, we have an apparent white hat, somebody who's for us, a consumer advocate, hired by Procter & Gamble to promote Elestra.
At least there's a warning on the label, right, that says that it causes, eating Elestra will cause loose stools and stomach cramps. And Procter & Gamble didn't want them to use the term diarrhea, so they won and got to use loose stools. Somehow that sounds more palatable.
Well, I don't know. I think the bottom line is we're looking at a big increase in Pepto-Bismol sales for Procter & Gamble.
John Stauber is co-author of Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. It's published by Common Courage Press. And you can reach him at the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. His email address is 74250.735@compuserve.com. That's 74250.735@compuserve.com. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. For those of you who've just discovered this show, let me tell you a little about some of the regular features on Democracy Now! Every Monday, we look at campaign finance, reform efforts, and how wealthy interests are influencing American politics in a segment called Money Talks. But it's not just Monday we look at money. In fact, tomorrow, we're going to be taking a look at Senator Alphonse D'Amato as we move to New York for the New York primary. We'll be looking at this head of the Banking Committee, kingmaker extraordinaire. We'll be looking at his power and money machine. On Tuesdays, Right Wing Watch will cover everything from how the Christian Coalition is organizing on the grassroots level to the rise of the militias, anti-abortion violence, and hate group activity throughout the United States. Wednesdays, it's members of Congress. They'll be joining us to talk about what's hot on Capitol Hill. We'll especially get to hear from members of the Progressive Caucus, now 50 members strong, founded by the only independent in Congress, Bernie Sanders from Vermont. Thursdays, it's our segment Living Democracy, focusing on what citizens are doing in communities around the United States to hold public officials accountable, revitalize neighborhoods, and promote social justice. And finally, Fridays, some of the country's leading progressive journalists joining us for a roundtable reviewing the events of the past week and looking ahead. This Friday, it's International Women's Day, and we'll be joined by international women's journalists who will be talking about U.S. presidential politics. Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin with Pat Greenfield and engineered by Ken Mason. You can write to us via our email address, democracy@pacifica.org. That's democracy@pacifica.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Join me in New York tomorrow for another edition of Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio's daily national grassroots election show.